It's rough out there, you know, in the world. Some of us turn to writing for solace and inspiration. Text that helps us take in the dark and find the light. So if you are someone who wraps themselves in words to warm your heart, or maybe just looking for a little help getting through the day, week, year, join us as we talk to people about the pieces of writing they use to bolster their souls and remember their way. The good bones that remind us we can make this place beautiful. Hello, and welcome to the Finding Good Bones podcast, a podcast where we talk about the writing we love that helps us sit with the dark, but find a way to also see the light. And I'm Kate, and I am your host. A host.
Excuse me?
I didn't mean it. Yep. I am your host.
Okay.
Oh my God, that reminds me of the time that my youngest sister was telling me and my other sister about her mom. I'm so sorry.
Okay, so I'm Amy, your host.
Exactly. Welcome to our podcast, Hour.
Hour.
Yeah, thank you. Amy, what are you reading right now?
I just started rereading again because when I'm stressed out, I reread Rosemary and Rue, which is the first novel in a long series by Shannon McGuire.
And yeah,
I keep mentioning her. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm pronouncing her name Shannon. It's S-E-A-N-A-N. So I don't know. But I've been doing that for 20 years. So I hope I'm right. It's a really good series. I think it's my favorite series. And there are fae all over the place. You have to be careful how you talk to them and about them. But it becomes a really rich, deep novel and series.
I think it was a little risky to just bring up the fair folk right now on our podcast.
I know.
It's fine. It's fine.
Do not thank. Do not accept gifts.
Okay. Well, so that actually makes me... I'm going to cheat a little bit this time. It'll definitely wind up here as one of the good bones. But one thing that I'm reading that's on my daughter's shortlist right now of preferred bedtime reading, which I get to do every night, is Instructions by Neil Gaiman, which is basically, you know, it's pulled from a short story, but it's all kind of lessons from different fantasy tales on like how to move through other worlds. And it really does come down to like, don't eat anything and be very polite and helpful. But there are some really wonderful, wonderful words in it. And, you know, sometimes my daughter is into like books that I love like that. And I'm like, yeah, I'll read this every night to you. And then other times she just really enjoys trash. And I still have to read it. And I know. I'm like, boo, but what about? She's like very obstinately, no. This one. But right now, Instructions is really, it's hardcore on the rotation. So I'm appreciating that. I'm reading it a lot over and over and over again. And it's one that I find something new in every time. So happy about it.
Good. I hope to hear it at some point on this show.
I gave you a copy of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I did read it.
Yes.
I read it. And then I folded a bunch of pages down and then I moved to a new apartment. So I don't know where it is, but it exists.
Oh my gosh. I found my copy of Night Bitch.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Are you ready?
Was it in the washer?
No. Oh, rude. Rude, Amy Winters.
Where was it?
It was on the bookshelf. I am very often like my downfall is things being put back where they technically belong.
It's
a downfall.
Well,
okay.
We are making Liz sit here and listen to us talk. So I want to introduce Liz, our guest for today. Liz Larson is an actor, writer, an occasional a-hole, for hire, aka trial attorney, based in Houston, Texas. I love that. In 2021, she took a career break to study acting theory and fell head over heels with it. Now, she splits her time between performing anything from long-form improv to contemporary theater, working on her Substack, Shakespeare Said It Better, that blends sketch comedy and Shakespeare criticism, and practicing a little law to pay those pesky bills. The whole time I was reading that, Kate was going nuts because of the acting background.
I had read the piece that Liz sent us previously that she's about to introduce to us, but I hadn't read her bio. So, dear listener,
she threw her hands in the air several times. Okay.
Sure. Sorry. Okay. It made me feel really great.
Okay, so we will now let Liz join in, and Liz, you can read your piece.
Thank you. This is Sonnet 65 by William Shakespeare. Since brass, nor stone, nor earth, nor boundless sea, but sad mortality o'ersways their power, how with this rage shall beauty hold a plea, whose action is no stronger than a flower? Oh, how shall summer's honey breath hold out against the wrackful siege of battering days, when rocks impregnable are not so stout, nor gates of steel so strong, but time decays? Oh, fearful meditation, where, alack, shall time's best jewel from time's chest lie hid? Or what strong hand can hold his swift foot back? Or who his spoil of beauty can forbid? Oh, none. Unless this miracle have might, that in black ink my love may still shine bright.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That was a beautiful rendition, Liz.
Yes.
Thank you.
And it made it more meaningful. Like, it brought out the meaning more with the emphasis that you put on certain words. Yay.
Yeah. So let's talk about it.
All right.
Yay. So do you have, what are your, some of your favorite, because like, let's be very clear. You are not limited in source material should you have decided that Shakespeare was what you wanted to bring or who you wanted to bring. So what is it about this particular sonnet that makes it so meaningful for you?
So I actually just came to this sonnet last year. I was doing an acting workshop and we had to prepare a sonnet. And I'm not big on love poetry. I've never been in love. It's never really spoken to me. John Donne's The Flea is about as close as I come to enjoying poetry.
I haven't read that in a while. I need to go back to it.
Yeah. It's been a favorite for a long time. So when I have to choose a sonnet, I love the ones where Shakespeare is giving a big middle finger to time. Sonnet 20 is the one that I've done forever and I love.
Yeah.
But this one, and that one was taken, so I had to choose another one. And I found this one. And, you know, it's a nice poem. And I enjoyed it. And then I was kind of walked through the performance of it. And my dad passed away about a year ago. And as I was going through it and seeing all of these images of everything being destroyed by time, right? Everything dies eventually, except the stories, right? And just the beauty of that, of what we create can live on beyond iron gates or rocky cliffs. And even when the people in our lives are gone, you know, what we say about them, how we write about them, that still exists.
I will say I lost my dad. It's about to be 3 years. And when I've read this before, but not since that happened. And when you sent this in, that's exactly where I went as well. Especially treading kind of in the personal storytelling biz, if you will, or sharing, right? Both in the podcast and elsewhere, like figuring out what to share and what to keep, right? Mm-hmm. Like what is actually mine and what is it okay for me to share? And the idea that there are some things that I should probably keep to myself, but it is in the telling of these stories and the sharing that I do get the opportunity to keep this person around. And so I really feel that I'll just leave it right there. But I definitely identify with some of what you were saying and the, you know, I think the ravages of time, right?
Yeah.
and that's in this so much, just some of the phrasing, right? Where it's, you know, rocks impregnable and what's another, like, battery days. Like,
yes.
it's, this is not a, you know, he does juxtapose it with, like, summer's honey breath, but, like, that's not what stays, right?
Yes. And, well, and that beauty of just a flower, not a field of flowers, not something that could even last longer than that, just, like, a daisy in a field versus the wrackful siege of battering days on rocks and gates. Yeah.
Not any gates. Gates of steel.
Yeah.
But it is, right? It is these softer, fragile comparisons with, yeah, these overpowering and strong and unyielding imagery. And that's something that at least for me, like that's something that mourning kind of can feel like, where I'm trying to hold on to my memories, but there's a lot of grief.
There is. And I found myself being more fragile, right? Like we went over it in the bio. I'm an asshole I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
Oh my God.
We have the pleasure of speaking with somebody who's listened to these before, and don't worry, every single one is marked explicit, whether or not it's earned it. So yeah,
So I'm an asshole for hire, right? Like I walk into court, I get screamed at in the face. Like grown men have done what you know, said terrible things.
Oh,
to
we
me
know, yes.
But going through grief, I did feel so fragile. Of it just like everything around me seemed more violent and caustic.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, I think it just that image of that single flower versus that unshakable force. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because a lot of times we get to feel like we're the force. And moments like that remind us like, we're the flower. Uncomfortable laugh with the acknowledgement of mortality.
What is art, right?
Yeah, what is art? But it's even in there too, right? Sad mortality. Like I hear a sad trombone noise after that.
No, don't pollute it with sad trombone.
No, I mean, but that's, you know, I think, what are you in Shakespeare for, Liz? What are you in it for?
Oh, yeah. I'm only, I'm glad this is marked explicit. Yeah. I only come to Shakespeare for the cunt jokes and the fart jokes. I mean,
yeah,
really, highbrow awesome. Art. That's how I approach it.
Yep.
It is one of those things that I think is really funny. I would love to talk a little bit more about your relationship, like with reading Shakespeare and how you've kind of found this. Because yeah, there is so much of Shakespeare that is very highbrow, and you manage this language so beautifully as somebody that's clearly practiced it. But alongside all of the beauty and the iambic pentameter, there are a lot of fart jokes, and there are a lot of euphemisms for sex and vulvas and all sorts of things. So I love that you're bringing that. So coming back to our sonnet, this is, do you know, I'm sure you do know offhand, how many sonnets there are?
Whew, I believe 135, but that's an estimate. It's somewhere in there.
And so this is sonnet 65. So we're kind of halfway. Now, does this fall into the Dark Lady or?
So first off, we don't actually know, to my knowledge, the order they were written in. This is the order they were published.
Just, mm-hmm.
Yes. It is before the Dark Lady. This is in the section known as the Fair Youth. Mm-hmm. But actually, there aren't as many to the Fair Youth as we think there are.
Right.
But to a degree, like, it is a variation on the theme. Because in the sonnets where Shakespeare's speaking to the Fair Youth, he's saying, you know, have kids to make your beauty last, because otherwise you're going to grow old and there won't be beauty anymore.
Yeah.
And so
it is.
Yeah.
It is to the Fair Youth. It is very much like focused on around time and like preserving memory and preserving moments. So I could see why this would fall into that. Well, I don't think it's addressed.
No,
I wouldn't. Specifically to either one. It does not seem. Nobody's mentioned. But it does fall in with those themes, right? It's not like torture of love, but very much the, like, figure out a way to stay, or I'll figure out a way to keep. This very much is about, like, I am figuring out a way to keep you.
Yes.
Which it's those last two lines, but where I do think the Dark Lady, like, still there are shadows of it. It's black ink, right? Mm. And like he talks about her inky, yeah. So it's very, you know, it's kind of, it feels to me kind of a combination of those two areas that we can see, or those two kind of commonalities of some of his sonnets.
So Amy and I were in a writer's workshop together. And the novel that I'm working on very much involves Shakespeare. It's kind of Shakespeare sketch comedy underneath a rom-com. And
bring it to my life, Liz. Bring it to my life.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
I haven't seen a draft and I keep being like...
it's close. It's ever so close. It's
no pressure.
Yeah. But I ended up kind of going down the rabbit hole of the theories on who the Fair Youth is. And one is that it's the third Duke of Southampton, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the theories is the Dark Lady is actually Elizabeth, his wife. I've heard the Amelia Bassanio theory, and I kind of like that more because she was also a poet.
Yeah.
But it is kind of nice to think that, I mean, maybe, I mean, Shakespeare's sexuality is often up for debate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or not even up for debate. But the idea that maybe the sonnet is about both of them, right? Maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also love, you know, I recently read Hamnet.
I'm in the middle of that.
Yeah. It's, I also love the idea. It touches on the idea of the interpretation of the Fair Youth. Like, it's not necessarily a sexual love, but it's actually like, ruminations, and then we go back to preservation and loss and grief. Oh, I'm not going to cry, but I might cry. Mm-hmm. Of the idea of that it is his child that he has lost recently. I think the sonnets were written after his son died of the plague. And so in the book they talk, or they, I don't know, it's not a spoiler, but it's kind of floating the idea that maybe some of this and this idea of preserving youth isn't necessarily about the idea of like sexually preserving youth or something like that, but rather the idea of like preserving the memory and holding on to it, which I thought was really like a lovely thing to read. And then every time I think about that, I'm like, well, but what if it was just some dude like, writing it out, like, yeah, this is good. It's about nothing. this is not about nothing, right? Like, and I think that's when we talk about the specificity of the language that helps us understand it's not about nothing.
Yeah. I do, you know, we all know that one MFA bro who's just so, up his own butt with his own brilliance. And like, I would never want to go back in time and meet William Shakespeare because I'm terrified that that's who I would meet.
Or worse than that, he's just stealing, right? It's not that he's taking in what other people are saying and finding a way to write it. Like, he's really just that guy that's like, typing it out. Written by William Shakespeare.
Yes, yes. A Discovery of Witches kind of paints him that way.
That has been recommended to me many times.
I read the first two and I really enjoyed them. I still haven't finished the third because they got into a trope that just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, the word pictures are so specific that he paints.
Mm-hmm.
And we know from his biography that he did face grief, right? His dad died right around the same time his son died. Mm-hmm. And his mother, not long after. It was around the time he wrote Lear, I think.
Yeah.
And a lot in the last year, I have been very comforted by the way he talks about grief.
Yeah.
And I think I really love this sonnet, especially because grief doesn't win here. You know, with Hamlet, grief destroys him.
Yeah.
And destroys Ophelia, I mean, even to a greater extent. And there's beauty in that destruction and the power that a love can have. But the idea that maybe words, art, poetry are more powerful than that grief.
I mean, it's not just, that's what we're kind of getting through this, like taking it back to the words, right? Because it's rage and... again, rackful siege of battering days, rocks impregnable are not so stout, gates of steel. But it's these simple lines, right? Like all of this is overpowering. And then it's the last two lines that switch back. And it's like, but actually more powerful than all of this, maybe, I hope, is me writing this down for you right now. And that, I think that's very, I find that very healing.
I do too. And, you know, so Sonnet 20 is a little bit more, you know, do your worst time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My sonnets are going to live on, like, F you, bro. This, the what strong hand can hold his swift foot back? Or who his spoil of beauty can forbid, is almost a call to more than just Shakespeare, right? Like, it's not just the speaker. It's asking society, who's going to stop this?
Yeah.
It's all going. Time is unstoppable. What do we do about it? Perhaps it's, you know, the miracle of my words.
Yeah, but not just, and I guess that's what's different, I think, about this. This isn't about his sonnets, right? This is about anybody's, because the black ink, right? Yeah. Like, it's not specifically his. It is in this moment, right? But I think that there is, with this piece, he's giving that power to other people as well. It's not about necessarily the power of his words as much as it is the power of the recording, right? Of the capturing this in verse and writing it down. And I understand that like literacy rates back then weren't the best. So it's not everybody, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like the power is not with the words as much as it's with the capturing of it, right?
Yes.
Love it. But also, like, just unfortunately, like, the ravages of time mean that this podcast has to end, even though I could keep talking to you and nerding out about Shakespeare for the rest of the night and longer. And I would love to do that in person at some point. So I think you know, we have seamlessly covered everything that we were going to ask you. So it's been beautiful and wonderful and organic. And is there anything you have mentioned several times that you perform frequently? Is there anything, because we are going to be timely about this, is there anything that you are working on that, you know, you would like to mention here or promote, or that we could send people to, like a website or
Substack? I'm not performing right now. I'm about to go take a very exciting class to work on that. I do have my Substack. I'm very proud of it. I've covered 5 or 6 of the plays and some comedy. So, yeah.
Yeah. We will send people that way in the show notes. Can you tell us the name of it one more time?
It's called Shakespeare Said It Better. I take one phrase from Shakespeare. I put it into a sketch comedy of, like, how would you bring Shakespeare into your daily life? And then kind of comedically recap the play and give people some insight into what may lie further than what their 7th grade English teacher told them about the play.
Well, I am signing up.
That sounds awesome. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has been absolutely magical.
Thank you all so much for having me. This has been a blast, and I'm definitely buying y'all a beer when I come your way.
Yeah, yes. We're going to drink a bunch and then shout body lines and hang out in a tavern. It's going to be authentic, except not because we're women. But anyhow, here's the part of the podcast where we would give somebody a recommendation for a selection of a piece for them. But nobody has asked. Insert sad trombone here again.
Email us. Email us at findinggoodbones@gmail.com. Tell us how you're feeling.
Or there's also on our contact page form on the website. Yeah, there's a form. You can just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Website.
I do. Yeah, I did it.
I don't know what's on
so, there. Yeah, someday the segment will work. But it's not today. But it's been an amazing episode. Thank you again so much, Liz. Thank you, Amy, who is the host, along with me, the other host.
Thank you.
Kate. Yeah, I'm so sorry. And then thank you, dear listener, for joining us as we go finding good bones.